Hey, everybody. Tony Bruschi from the Dark Side of Wikipedia. Hope you're enjoying our programs. And if you like what you're hearing, be sure to check out one of our other shows, Real Ghost Stories Online. You can download it wherever you download podcasts. Each week, we put out a bonus episode jam-packed with some of the best ghost stories we get in. Here's a 15-minute preview of this week's EPP bonus episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. When you're a kid, thinking about ghosts and paranormal and spooky stuff is just kind of a rite of passage for a lot of us. It's just kind of one of those things that we do at campfires or when you want to freak out, maybe a girl or a boy or whatever, when you're going to get to be a teenager and it's that kind of romantic-y time. There's all sorts of ways where the idea of spooky enters, you know, the lexicon of childhood. For many of us, though, it just stops at that. It's just the idea. It's a story. It's a weird feeling, maybe a weird sound or something. But ultimately, it's an explainable event that is nothing to do with the paranormal. It's our imaginations running wild. Another rite of passage is the sleepover, where, you know, you got a friend come over to the house or you go to their house and you sleep over. Sometimes the two intermingle then. You get the ghost stories with the sleepover. Sometimes the ghost stories end up inventing themselves on the sleepover, and the sleepover themselves become the ghost stories. On today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, that is precisely what happens. We have two stories of two totally different childhood sleepovers that end up being ghost stories that are told for many years to come. Our first story, what should have been that innocent child sleepover, ends up turning into one of the most terrifying experiences in one person's life and ends up tearing a family apart. And then our second story, two kids having the sleepover, one sleeps soundly through the night, the other is found having a panic attack in the driveway from what they just endured. It's good stories. That's today on Real Ghost Stories Online, EPP bonus episode number 359. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us. Staying in someone else's house can sometimes be a little bit uncomfortable, you know, especially if you're not familiar with it. And when you're a kid, that's a, you know, sometimes the sleeping arrangements aren't the most comfortable. I personally hated sleepovers as a kid because there's always, who's going to sleep on the living room floor and watch? I'm like, I got the couch. I call the couch. So if I was on that floor, I can guarantee you I was not going to sleep. It can be uncomfortable, but can be even more uncomfortable when there's something paranormal going on with the house. And when you yourself realize this, maybe others don't, and then you, when you do fall asleep, end up getting communication, visions, and messages of something very dark lurking within the house. But how do you communicate that to your friends, to the adults, when you're just a child? They're not going to believe you. The only way to verify the darkness in those dreams is to let time progress and to let that darkness do what it will do, eventually completely eroding a family. That's what happens in our next story. Take a listen. This is the scariest incident that I've ever had happen to me. Even scarier than having the encounters with a shadow man when our family friends owned the house that we lived in. Like I've said before, I believe that myself and the whole maternal side of my family are some levels of sensitive to the paranormal. Some of my families have chosen to ignore this sensitivity. Some, like myself, have embraced it, or at the very least, are intrigued by the paranormal. At the time of this story, I had to have been about 13 to 14 years old and was obsessed with the paranormal or ghost hunting TV shows. Of course, at that ripe, tender age, after watching so many TV shows, I believed that I could be an amateur ghost hunter, with the added benefit of being sensitive and able to get the feelings from the spirits. It just so happened that my two childhood best friends were also super into the paranormal and ghost hunting, and one of them was experiencing paranormal activity at their house. So what is a group of teenage ghost hunters supposed to do but go investigate? My friend, whom we'll call Lee, was experiencing a lot of the atypical haunted house phenomena. Doors opening and closing in the middle of the night or when no one was home. Odd noises or someone calling her name when she was the only person in the house. Objects moved to unusual places or disappearing altogether, then reappearing in the exact place it was left that day before. The reason we thought it would be a good idea to ghost hunt in Lee's house was most of the time she was home alone. It was her mom, dad, and herself that lived in the house, while her older sister would sometimes come and visit to spend the weekend. We were so interested in her house at the time because recently Lee, her mother, and sometimes her sister, when she visited, were all starting to see things in the home as well. For one instance, Lee would be sitting on the couch in the open living room, and out of the corner of her eye, see movement between the banisters going down to the basement, like someone was walking downstairs. But when she looked, no one was there, and she was the only one home. On another occasion, Lee told us about how she and her mother were sitting in the living room watching a movie late at night, and apparently both saw movement by their back French doors. As they turned to watch, an orb-like shape was moving back and forth in front of the glass doors, and suddenly, it stopped in front of one, and the orb slowly began to change into the wispy shape of a face. When Lee's mom got up off the couch in alarm, the face had disappeared. Although her mom immediately opened the door, there was no one on the other side, and nowhere someone could have run. Due to the motion triggered floodlights in their backyard. So naturally, we arranged for Lee, me, and our other friend, whom we'll call Cece, to have a sleepover at Lee's house on a day when we would be in the home alone for most of the time. The day started off with us coming over to Lee's after school and immediately started playing ghost hunters. We started off our investigation by walking around her house with our little flip phones, voice memos going as we attempted EVP sessions, calling out to see if there was anyone there that could speak to us, and many other questions that we had seen the professionals on TV ask. After playing the audio files, each one of us could swear we heard whispers, quiet giggling and breathing that was not our own. Although looking back on it now, I'm not sure if at all we had really caught any evidence. Throughout our little investigation inside the house, I kept getting this feeling of being watched, and both myself and Cece kept seeing things move out of the corner of our eyes. Eventually, we moved on to going around Lee's backyard asking the same questions we had inside. But with us going outside, the feeling of being watched grew even more intense, as did the movement in our peripherals. Finally, I got to one point where we were walking around the corner of the shed, and I saw a little boy peeking around the far corner. But it was not like I physically saw him, or that my two friends could see him either. Much like as you refer to them as information downloads, I'd seen this little boy in my mind's eye. I still remember him very clearly. He appeared to be around 7 or 8, had a slight face with a narrow chin, a little upturned bottom nose or button nose, dirty dish blonde hair, a light cream or maybe brown shirt, dark colored blazer, and what I would call a newspaper boy hat that matched his jacket. Suddenly the boy looked away from us like someone had called his name and ran off to the middle of the yard where I saw an older man. Again, I saw them in my mind's eye. I can still very clearly remember them to this day. The old man had a full head of neatly combed white hair and a well-trimmed but short white beard. He wore slacks or suit pants, but made from older materials, a button-down shirt with a green tweed waistcoat over it. I swear it looked like these two had walked out of the early 19th century. I got this feeling that the little boy was curious and the other gentleman was his grandfather, and kind of watching over him. When I told my friends what I had seen, neither of them had seen or heard anything. After a little while of listening back to our EVPs, Cece started to get freaked out, so we stopped and went on to playing something else until it was time for bed. When we stayed at Lee's, we would sleep in the finished basement, which was set up with a living room at the end of the hallway to the right of the stairs, and down another hallway to the left of the stairs was a bathroom, an extra bedroom, and an unfinished utility room. But the door was always locked. All three of us hated to walk up to that utility room door. Lee had said that it always felt creepy to her as well. We always slept on a pull-out couch, and on this night, it happened to be Cece on the side, close to the rest of the couch where Lee was sleeping. And I slept on the side that faced the open arch to the hallway. This is where the true horror of my story happens. When I tell others this part of the story, I can never explain whether it's a dream, a vision, astral projection, or even a case of sleep paralysis. Perhaps you guys can explain. I am asleep and tossing and turning, and I turn to face the hallway and get the sense that I'm being watched. So I open my eyes, and staring at me with just his face, just above the mattress, is a little boy I had seen earlier. Although a normal person would be startled or jump when they open their eyes to a little ghost boy several inches away from their faces, I did not feel any of that. The little boy put his pointer finger against his lips in the shah motion, and then I got the sense I should look to the foot of the bed, which I did. Standing there was a grandfatherly gentleman, and when I looked back to the side, the boy had stood up. He told me without speaking or opening his mouth that I needed to get up. I swung my legs over the bed and arose, turning back to see if I had woken up or disturbed Cece. But what I saw was Cece still asleep, and myself still asleep as well. It had appeared that my spirit had left my body. I turned back around, and now both the ghost boy and his grandfather were standing at the side of the bed in front of me. The older man, once again without speaking, neither one of them openly spoke to me, even when they were telling me things, told me to follow them. They led me down the hallway, past the stairs, the bathroom, the guest bedroom, and finally stopped in front of the utility room door. But the door did not look like it did when I was awake. It had sludgy, black almost, smoke leaking out from under it, and every other crack around it, and wave upon wave of mean and vicious intent was washing over me from that door. And that's where we're going to pause the preview portion of this week's EPP bonus episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you'd like to hear the rest of it, become a supporter of our podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online. Simply go to ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. $5 a month will get you access to all of our episodes, thousands of them in the archive, quite literally the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories. You get all of our EPP bonus episodes, now 359 of them, on top of those other thousands of episodes I just talked about. Our ebook, our audiobook, all of it is there, advanced episodes of the show, and it's all commercial free. So if you like the show and you want it without ads and all that, it's only $5 a month. Keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. An EPP, as we call them, at ghostpodcast.com or through Patreon at patreon.com/realghoststories.